But right now, we're going to talk about manhood. A friend of mine posted this article written by Sebastian Younger on her Twitter page a few days ago, and I found it really interesting. The Anthropology of Manhood. And I read the article. It's pretty lengthy, but I thought it would make a really great topic for a segment on our show because, as you know, we have a lot of men that listen to this show.
Oh, yeah.
And we have a lot of women who listen to the program who are interested in men. And so the whole topic of manhood, it's a very broad topic, what it means to be a man in today's society and how difficult it is in today's society to be a man the way we used to be a man 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, 1,000,000 years ago. Evolution, society, and the male propensity for violence. And Younger writes, the forgivable idea that manhood is morally suspect has been around for a long time. The vast majority of murders, assaults, rapes, armed robberies, and threats to public safety are committed by young men. Most men are not criminals, of course, but a huge majority of criminals are men. Men make up 93% of the American prison population. The cause is not just poor socialization. Male violence is a problem across all societies, communities, and races, and the primary driver is testosterone, which declines steadily throughout a man's adult life. As testosterone levels go down, so do rates of violence and accidental death, which would not be the case of socialization alone, if that were to blame. Sorry, we just need some different music here. This is like way too carnival atmosphere. I don't know what's going on with that. Just some low-key background music would be awesome. So a lot of people blame socialization, but what he's saying is it's testosterone because most violence is committed by young men, not old men. It's young men, and that wouldn't be the case if socialization were to blame. That would be a lifetime thing. It's not uncommon to hear well-meaning people declare that if women ran the world, it would be a much better place. That doesn't mean that the kinds of women who want to run the world wouldn't bring their own problems as well. People who say they want women to run the world presumably mean good women, as opposed to Imelda Marcos or Mary Queen of Scots.
They'd tie up that hotline to the White House for sure. You'd never get in on that thing.
Does women talk too much? Is that what you're saying, George?
I didn't say too much.
Huh.
I just said a lot.
Okay.
But people who make that argument point out that women are not as violent as men. And that is absolutely true. Men are wired to be violent and aggressive. Throughout the primate world, males are physically better at defending a group's scarce resources because they're larger, stronger, and faster on average. They're unburdened by pregnancy or young offspring. It's their job. Furthermore, men are eminently disposable. Kill most of the men in a society and it quickly recovers. Kill most of the women and it dies out within generations. Because of all of these factors, a common definition of manhood throughout history has been a willingness to put the safety of others above one's own. As anthropologist Joyce Benson put it to me, the definition of a man is someone you can count on when the enemy comes. Although gender is a cultural concept that is in constant flux, sex is not. Sex traits, such as women having less body hair or men having more testosterone and bigger muscles, are the product of millions of years of evolution. Humans split from chimps 6 million years ago and have been shaped in large part by what each sex found desirable in the other. Individuals with desirable traits were more likely to pass their genes on to the next generation, so those traits gradually spread through the population. There is no way to discuss what men are biologically without addressing what women choose sexually. Given the level of violence in human history, then, it's not surprising that many studies show a female preference for partners who can protect them. A 2015 study found a strong correlation between a woman's self-reported vulnerability and her sexual preference for aggressive men. Studies have also shown that deep-voiced, high-testosterone males are preferred by women of reproductive age. And the preference for high-testosterone men spikes when women are ovulating. A 2015 study found that women were shown photographs of young men, and they constantly rated men with combat medals as more attractive than other men.
Mm-hmm.
A different study showed a similar result for facial scars. Young women liked men with facial scars. These studies don't describe how all women choose their mates. They simply show a bell curve of preference for aggression and dominance. Women also say they like men who can tell a story, whatever that means. On average, dominant high testosterone males regularly outcompete subordinate males for sexual opportunities. This creates a problem, though. Men who are hormonally predisposed to violence make great warriors, but dangerous partners and fathers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's
the
catch.
Here's the rub of all this.
This is the rub.
Men and women.
Right.
Women want the high testosterone, aggressive, violent,
tough
streak
guy.
Male
yeah.
who mm-hmm. can protect her, who's got scars on his face and combat medals. But the more testosterone, the more violent you are, the worse husband and
right.
father you could make.
The problem is your biology is wants to get a male that is absolutely a horrible partner.
Right.
You want the guy to breed with is not the same guy that you want to live with.
Right.
And we live in a culture in which we've combined those two roles. And that herein lies the friction between in every relationship.
I found this interesting. Younger writes that to counteract that threat, men experience a significant drop in testosterone when they become fathers. And even when they hold a child, female preference for high testosterone males coupled with a drop in male aggression around children may be an evolutionary balancing act.
Yeah, to keep from infanticide from happening, basically.
Exactly. He says to allow the maximum number of children to survive. This hormonal component of male behavior is then greatly amplified by social conditioning, and the two combine to affect behavior in spontaneous, unconscious ways. During the mass shooting in Aurora, Colorado, 4 of the 12 victims were young men who died protecting women with their bodies. There were no examples of the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Women are well known to protect their children, but women never step in front of men to take a bullet for them. That's spontaneous. That's in the heat of battle. That's just nature kicking in. One study found that 90% of bystander rescues in which a person tries to save a stranger are performed by men. The male nature takes over, kicks in. They've got to perform the rescue. The women don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because of testosterone, men have on average about twice as much upper body strength as women, and that has long made them capable of doing jobs that women may struggle with. So back in the day, when you're farming or you're building a house or whatever, the man always does that because he can get it done quicker because he's stronger. And so that's long been a definition of what a man is. He's the one that's going to do all the physical work. Well, with the improvement in technology, we've now gotten to a point where men and women can both operate the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
They can both operate the farm machinery that does all the work. It's not the muscles, it's the machinery. So those physical barriers to those jobs have been removed. The gender-specific jobs disappear, and now it's harder for men to know whether they have anything essential to offer society. And Younger writes, fatherhood is a poor measure of manhood. Plenty of good men don't have children. Plenty of bad fathers have made enormous sacrifices for their community or their nation. So in our modern age, how does a man demonstrate his worthiness, his manhood, if he has no children to raise and no enemy to fight? Both the triumph and tragedy, he concludes, of modern study, of modern society, is that we've eliminated almost every hardship and danger from daily life. That's what used to separate a man.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that would go out and confront the hardship and the danger. He would do the heavy lifting. He would fight the enemy. He would protect the family. But now we have security alarms and we have automated jobs and everybody's got a white collar job, you know, most. Mm-hmm.
And George can lift up the phone to do any sort of manly task or repair anything. Or
he says the very efficiency of mass society makes people feel unnecessary. And therein lies a profound threat to our dignity. The poor are dehumanized by the menial jobs and shoddy urban housing they often wind up in. The rich are dehumanized by the very privilege and luxury that they use to insulate themselves from everybody else. The middle class is dehumanized by the cookie-cutter suburban homes they've mortgaged their futures for. The old are dehumanized by the speed and complexity of the mechanized world. The young are dehumanized by the wholesale substitution of social media and video games for real human experiences. And every last one of us is dehumanized by a society that uses algorithms and mass communication to feed us the truths we prefer and the lies that we need.
Yeah, I know we're wired a certain way. I wonder how it is progressing, or I guess you could say digressing, depending on how you want to look at it. Like my dad and how he was treated as a kid about toughness and no, that's not what a man does. And then that degenerated a little bit to my generation and then me to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're wired that way with all the testosterone to be tough and to be, you know, be ready to fight and all that. But I wonder how that has been affected over, I don't know, let's say the last 80 years.
Well, this is the subject that I think I read about the most these days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a subject that you can't really talk openly about. Which is because the dominant cultural conversation is basically all masculinity is bad masculinity. Now, to be a good man is to shut up and let progressivism or feminism or whatever have the entire conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So what it means to be a good man is to shut up and let everyone else do the talking, which is very dehumanizing. Well, what about these people? And the argument is, well, men have been able to dominate the cultural conversation for so long, we don't want to hear from them. But what does that do to the men who are living now who didn't have anything to do with past right. oppression, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just repeating the sins of the past by giving the power to somebody else is not the way to correct things long term. So what is the only masculinity I ever hear talked about is toxic masculinity. What is good masculinity? What does it mean to be a man when you've outsourced the things that men used to do, or you've made them negatives? The things that men used to be and used to, those were virtues. Now these are seen as toxic, or these mm-hmm. are bad things to do. To be a leader, to be a, you know, to act like, hey, women don't need your protection. You know, a guy who tries to do something to protect a woman. We don't mm-hmm. need your protection.
Sometimes you may.
And now that we're getting to the point where you can have children without men, and we don't need men to protect you, we don't need men to go to war, we don't need men, well, what is a man's job? What's a man's function in the world? And I think that it does leave us at...
They're trying to write us out of the script?
A big question mark, yeah. I think that it's just the narrative that all... The thing is that the conversation, the cultural, broader conversation about men being bad and everything is not exactly the life that women lead. Women still tend to like men with these qualities.
Mm-hmm.
But yet when they have to talk publicly, they talk performatively, which is that all this stuff is bad. But there is something essential in all of us that will be attracted to what some call a false binary, but I think there is this... There's feminine and there's masculine. And these two things are attracted to each other at almost a cellular level. And women find men with traditional masculine traits attractive. But they will go on and talk and perform publicly as if rag on the guy for doing this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a lot of times they will have problems with it. You know, hey, he doesn't talk about his emotions enough. He's remote. He's kind of a loner. He's not always involved in family things. All these things that the traditional male animal actually is.
Mm-hmm.
He is more alone, and he doesn't talk, and he doesn't communicate and connect. And to get frustrated at him for not being as feminine as you would like him to be at times, that's part of the deal. And oddly enough, if you sift it down, that's part of the reason you're attracted to him. Is that he is unknowable in some sense. He
yes.
is this other that you are drawn to because you want to understand the other. But his otherness will also always be a gulf that you can never transcend. And this is the thing that makes the two sexes attracted to each other. But we're annoyed so much by our nature. We're annoyed by our biology. And we've tried, culture in general is basically a response and a rebellion against nature.
Yeah, you are exactly right. That is incredibly well said. And I've thought that for a long time. We spend so much of our energy fighting our nature, fighting how we are wired. Some of it, I understand, and some of it maybe needs to be done. There's nothing good about a rape, right?
Yeah. But nothing good about infanticide and all these murderous impulses that we try to tamp down in all human animals. Yeah, culture is trying to corral certain aspects of nature. But the idea that we get, I think that we as humans have gotten so empowered by technology, by progress, by our own wealth and smarts. We've learned to tame nature so well that we now have this insatiable appetite to control everything about nature. And we're annoyed by the fact that we're still bedeviled by nature.
We have P1 Tom. He says that one of the problems that modern man faces is that they're in a no-win situation. You know, if you want to be a man, if you want to act the way you're wired, well, then people look down on you now. And he says, plus, in a relationship, how many times do you hear the man who just, it feels like he's been emasculated? Happy wife, happy life. Oh, I got my honey-do list. Oh, let me check with the boss. Mm-hmm. You know, you've put her in the position of the man of the family. Well, now what does the man of the family do?
His job is to do whatever she says.
That's not good for a man.
If you reverse those two roles, we see that that's wrong too.
Right.
You know? She's not there to just blindly obey him.
Right.
So why are we, you go girling, this idea that you're doing this to another human being?
So I don't know if this helps, but this is how Younger wraps up his article. He says, a new use for manhood may simply be to protect our precious human dignity at every turn. That's hard to define, but it's unmistakable when you see it. The man who stopped the column of tanks at Tiananmen Square. The tank driver who refused to drive over him. The Latino worker who offered me a seat on the subway because I was holding an infant. The struggling business owner who forsook a year's salary so he wouldn't have to fire anybody. What all these men have in common is that they put the welfare of others ahead of their own. The definition of manhood hasn't changed, but the enemy has. For the first time in history, it's starting to look very much like us. It's man trying to figure out what it is to be a man in this day when there's no real definition of a man.
Yeah. Interesting.